You're listening to Finding Direction, where we help people who feel lost find direction in their life. We interview the most passionate and fulfilled people and reverse engineer their life to uncover how they found direction. In doing so, we uncover strategies, tactics, and actionable steps you can apply to live a life of passion, fulfillment, and happiness. I'm your host, Stu Massengill, and thanks for listening in. What's up, everybody? This week's episode is brought to you by Audible. And if you have not heard of Audible yet, this is an absolute must have, an absolute must add to your tool belt and to your daily life. Now, a little bit about Audible. They are a leading provider of spoken word audiobooks. Basically, you can find any book you would ever imagine in audiobook format on Audible. And a couple books that I personally have listened to on Audible, and honestly that have been the most impactful books in my life, are two that I'll recommend for you that you can basically dive right into. The first book is called The Defining Decade. And I know on this show we talk a lot about figuring out your life, your purpose, and what you want to do with your life. And this book basically, Dr. Meg Jay, she really dives into a little bit more of the science behind how to figure out what you want to do with your life. She was a counselor at a college, and basically through seeing so many people go through this question of what do I want to do with my life, she really went into this pretty big study around it. So that's a phenomenal book. Absolutely, absolutely recommend that if you're wanting to figure out what you're doing with your life. And the second book, which this is hands down absolutely the most profound book I've ever read in my life, the biggest book that changed my life, and it's called How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. And don't get sidetracked by the title. It's not a negative connotation of influencing people. It's how can you go out there and be better at communicating, right? Because if we are not good with humans, we're not going to enjoy life as much. They are everywhere. I grew up as a shy kid and didn't really feel like I had communication skills. And when I got my hands on this book, I can tell you it changed everything for me in my life, not just to be happier around people, but just be more fulfilled and more excited and find more joy in life. So those are two books that I absolutely, absolutely hands down recommend. And a couple other cool things about Audible is, as we mentioned, there's thousands of titles you can choose from there. And the cool part is you get to listen wherever you want. You can actually download the audiobook to your phone and you can listen to it while you're on a plane. You can pause it, you can come back to it on another device and resume right where you left off. And it's all done from an app from your phone. So they make it really simple. You listen to it anytime you want. I often will listen to it while I'm cooking food or going on a walk or if I'm working out. It's just an easy way to really learn more while doing a bunch of other random things that I do in my daily life. So absolutely recommend checking them out. And for all of you that have not checked out Audible yet, what we're going to be doing today on the episode, which is really cool, is we're going to get you a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership of Audible. All you need to do is just go to audibletrial.com/findingdirection and you're going to get one free audiobook. So, you know, again, I would check out The Defining Decade. It's a big book helping you figure out what you want to do with your life. And also another incredible one, a must check out, is How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. Again, just go to audibletrial.com/findingdirection. What's up, my friend? Welcome back to the Finding Direction podcast. Here on this week, we're sitting down with Christopher Dedeon, and we are looking at the story of his life. Now, Christopher, to give you a little bit of a background on him, he is a peak performance coach, he is a speaker, and he is someone that I like to call, and you'll hear me reference this a few times, the human encyclopedia. Christopher has an abundance of wisdom and knowledge on all sorts of different things, so it was a pleasure diving in with him here. And one thing that's really interesting about Christopher's story, and you'll hear this more, is at a young age, he was diagnosed with dyslexia, and he's turned something that other people may call a disability into one of his greatest strengths. So I'm excited for you to hear more about that in his story and in this episode. But we also talk about on this episode how you may need to step into your fear that you're having in your life today, and more specifically, that your fear is actually the thing that's leading you to your purpose. All right, it's massively powerful. I'm so excited if you hear that part of the episode. We also talk about, you know,
what caused Chris? He was pursuing the path of being a fireman, and all of a sudden, he entirely took a left turn. He became an entrepreneur, and we talk about how did he really make that shift? What was going on through his mind as he was walking a path that he knew wasn't the path he was supposed to walk? How did he make that shift from knowing it wasn't what he was supposed to be doing to making the change? And we also talk about what a good evening routine can do in your life. A lot of the time on the show, we talk about the importance of a morning routine, and it's massively important in your life. But Chris touches a little bit more on kind of what his evening routine is, the importance of having that. So you're going to get so much in this episode. I am beyond excited for you to dive into it. If you have not yet, please go to the iTunes store if you're listening there. If you're on Spotify, leave us a rating, leave us a review. We'd be extraordinarily grateful. And just let us know, what do you enjoy most about this show? All right, that's how we get this in front of more people, make more of an impact. And if you would take approximately 12 seconds to do that, I would be extremely, extremely grateful. All right, so we are going to dive right in. Without any further ado, here we go. Christopher Dedeon, welcome to the show, my man. I'm excited to have you here.
Stu, thank you very much, brother. Really a pleasure as well. I know we're going to have a great conversation just through with the energy that we had in the beginning of the call.
Absolutely, man. We're going to be a fireball rocking on here today. And so, you know, as we kind of kick this thing off, I would love for you to give people sort of an inside look to sort of what was life like for little Christopher as you grew up. Kind of, you know, what was little Christopher doing when he's a little kid running around?
Little Christopher, let's take it way back. Little Christopher was hella hyperactive. My parents, like, you know, were like trying to put me in sports so I could burn my energy. Yeah. And a big part of that is because I'm actually diagnosed with hyperactivity and dyslexia. So at 8 years old, I was diagnosed with dyslexia. And my parents put me in a specialized school for that. And once I got into that school, started realizing, you know, how to deal with dyslexia, how to deal with my hyperactivity. And that was essentially the little Christopher's journey. It wasn't necessarily an easy one in regards to a young kid trying to figure out how to succeed in the education system that we were giving, which wasn't structured for me in a sense.
Once
I got into that specialized school, I learned how I learn. I got the proper methodology, the proper techniques, and the proper teachers around me to teach me all these things so then I could be a successful individual in this society, essentially.
Yeah. How much of a game changer do you feel like it was that your parents were like, we're going to put you in a place where you're going to learn and like turn, you know, what some people may see as things that could hinder you. Like, we're going to teach you how to use this and maximize this and like make this a strength of yours rather than, you know, I feel like some people could be like, nah, like just keep you in regular school. And you may have struggled a bit. Like, how much of an advantage do you feel it gave you because you were like, you were taught how to effectively use the brain that you were given? And I think you said it so beautifully, like, the education system is built for a certain specific type of person, and we all have to learn about ourselves in an individualistic way. And that's how we, you know, maximize the skills and the gifts that we have inside of us. So I'm just curious to hear that from you. Like, how much do you think that like changed your life?
Okay, Stu, great question. How much did it change my life? It is my kryptonite origin story. It is the moment when Spider-Man gets bitten by a spider and becomes Spider-Man. That is really what it is. Now, I could say that in an eloquent way today, being a 33-year-old man and seeing that vision. But at 8 years old, all I understood as a young kid in the middle of school years, my parents are taking out my school and putting me in a specialized school, in air quotes. I didn't want that. All I heard was I'm losing my friends and I'm going to a school that's specialized. But then once I got into that school, I started realizing the first thing is that I'm not alone. There's hundreds of kids like me that have learning disabilities. So I started getting more comfortable with that learning disability. Not only getting comfortable, but like I previously mentioned, started learning how to learn with my difficulty and then realizing, oh, I could actually utilize this almost like a strength in certain regards. So then once I got into the end of the high school and started succeeding in high school, like everybody, the thing is like, hey, what are we going to do next? Like, what's the next step? What are we going to go study as a professional, university, so on? So I decided I wanted to become a lawyer because I like wearing nice suits. That's something that attracts me. I'm like, yeah, that's the, I like talking. I'm like, that's what it is. As I like looked into more of what it takes to be a lawyer, I realized like 85% of the job is reading and writing. So essentially for people who don't know what dyslexia is, it's a difficulty that has to do with reading and writing. It takes me five more times per effort to read than somebody that's a non-dyslexic in itself. I could go more in depth with it, but essentially the gist of it is that in itself. So once I like saw that, you know, being a lawyer is mainly of reading and writing, I'm like, let me go into something that doesn't have a lot of reading, writing, or none at all. And what I find was actually fireman. I'm like, oh, wow, that's cool. Let me become a fireman. The boys, the adrenaline, serving others, giving back. I'm like, yo, this is hitting on like a lot of my core beliefs and values as a young man. So Stu, I went into that industry, loved it, started working at Pratt & Whitney Canada. Now the transition within that period, I went from not knowing what dyslexia is, starting to be a bit more comfortable. But when I got into the professional world, I was still very shy about this, and not only shy, but embarrassed. I didn't want my peers to know that I had a learning disability, so they would think less than of me or think I'm stupid or whatever the case is, which is not at all true. So as I started working into the professional field and Pratt & Whitney Canada to become an industrial fireman, I realized that my whole life, I was repressing something within me, calling it out of practicality. I was meant to be an entrepreneur. I remember when the teacher used to come into the classroom and say, kid, put yourself in teams. Even before she finished her word three, I had my head up and I'm like, who reads the best? Who writes the best? Let me put a team together, get the grade together, and we delegate the work. Both delegation 101, entrepreneurship. I remember in college too, when I used to fail, I used to go back and see the professor afterwards. I'm like, oh no, that's not what I meant. This is what I meant in the exam. And I used to negotiate my grade up, negotiation 101. So as I started realizing, oh, I'm meant to be an entrepreneur, and I was repressing it out of fear of reading, which I correlate, I would rather go into a building that is on literally on fire instead of reading. And I was able to be more mature and see that. Then I went to becoming a real estate broker. And as I started going into that, I'm going to go into like a little bit more of my rant so you guys can know the origin story. Like I said, when Spider-Man got bit by the spider over here. So as I started succeeding in brokerage, and granted, as every entrepreneur knows, succeeding, I mean, it took me a year and a half to start succeeding. The first year and a half, I literally paid to be a broker. But after a certain point of just being relentless and putting in the work, it started blowing up for me. Yeah. And one day, one of my speech therapists that used to follow me in high school gave me a call to ask me a question about a real estate property she wanted to sell. And after a few minutes, she's like, Chris, how's it going for you? And as Stu, you're noticing and your listeners are noticing or your viewers, I could go on a rant. So I went on a rant. I'm like, oh my God, I'm in my mid 20s. I'm super successful. The money, the car, whatever success is in the eyes of society, I was having all of that. Yeah. And she's like, Chris, that is amazing. I'm the keynote speaker at this event put together by the Learning Disability Institute of Quebec. I would love for you to come and tell us your story of how you are a successful dyslexic entrepreneur. I'm like, yes, I love that. Stu, that same evening, she writes me an email in the subject letter in big caps. Chris, I don't think you should be doing this speech because there's still a lot of negative misconception of what dyslexia is, and you might lose out on certain clients. Yeah. Now, I know she was coming from a place of love and she was coming from a place of protection, but I write her an email saying, hey, I'm going to call you on Monday and tell you why I think I should do this speech. So Monday rolls around, give her a call. And I'm like, if I am not doing this speech, I'm not helping the kids that are on the school benches right now. I'm not helping the next generation. And I'm not helping my future kids because this is something hereditary. I would be fake. Yeah. I'm not fake. And if ever somebody doesn't want to work with me because I'm dyslexic, those aren't clients that I want to work with.
Yeah, for sure.
She's like, oh my God. She's like, 100% Chris, I agree with you. I just wanted to come from you. I'm like, beautiful. And I'm like, how many people are going to be at this event? She said, about like 200. Now, Stu, let me just give you a little framework here. I had never given a speech at that point. I was just going because I'm like, hey, yeah, I have to give back to my community of learning disability and so on. Now I get to that event, brother. I open the door. I look left and right. There isn't 200 people. It's more like 1,000 people. Now at this point, my heart is beating. I am sweating crazy. I'm like, what the heck did I get myself into? I sit down, one professor after another, one doctorate after another is on stage. I'm like, what the heck am I doing here? And then that moment comes. They're like, Chris, can you please come on stage and present us your story? And the best way I could describe it, it was like this divine moment of like the universe preparing me my whole life for this. Everything that I went through was for that. And it was just such a magical moment, the praise that I got, the opportunities I got after that. And then from that moment on, I knew that I had to be a professional speaker and a peak performance coach and share my knowledge and my expertise of how I got through what I got through and how I utilize personal development, brain chemistry, and just using the proper habits and rituals to succeed in life to share to others. And from that moment on, I switched everything, what a lot of people thought I was crazy, but I did it. And God bless, now I'm just enjoying life doing what I'm doing right now, which is, like I said, a speaker and a coach.
Yeah, I love it, man. What a journey, right? And one thing I would love to dive into, two things that you said that I think are so powerful is that sometimes we choose fear disguised as practicality, mm-hmm. right? Where it's, I'll go be a fireman because it's, you know, it's badass and I can be cool and like I can give back and I can serve. And you, it sounds like you've always had a serving heart, but it was really fear saying, well, that's more practical than facing this thing of reading. And one thing I would be curious to hear from you is it takes a good amount to push somebody through their fear, especially if it's yes. like, it's a muscle, right? So the more you do it, the easier it gets. But it sounds like at this point of your life, there was some initial fear where it was like, maybe this was kind of the first time you were really pushing through that fear. And I think, you know, for anybody that's listening to this, I'm certain there's people that are having something similar where they're going, okay, maybe there is, you know, fear disguised as practicality. But what I want to hear from you, and I think it can serve a lot of our listeners, is like, what was the moment that was like, I don't care about this fear. I am pushing through this. I need to be an entrepreneur. I was put on this earth to do it. I've been ignoring it. Like, what was the moment that you were like, I'm not dealing with this fear anymore. Like, I'm going to go through it. If it takes me down, I don't care. But like, I am not letting it stop me anymore.
Great question, Stu. And here's why it's a great question. Because I would say like 9 times out of 10, if not more than that, people are listening to their fears, calling it out of practicality. Like, for example, oh, you know what? I can't start my business now. It's not a right time. I don't have the capital. Oh, I can't do this. I have kids. Oh, I have bills. Oh, I have this. Oh, you know what? I'll start my workout Monday. Oh, Monday comes around. Oh, you know what? We're already Wednesday. Let's do it next week. Oh, okay. I have this birthday coming up. We're disguising our fear out of practicality. Now, where does it come into play, which was your question, which is really great, is how do you really unpack that and notice, hey, this is a fear. Now, is this disempowering me? And if so, what can I do about it? And the number one thing to really figure that out, I'm going to give it in 2 steps, actually. But the first thing you have to look at is you have to have massive clarity. If you want to be a high achieving individual, you have to have that clarity. And that clarity is done by no other way than you turning within. It's not outside the answer, it's within. And it's a very dark place. It's a scary place because you're you by yourself with your insecurities, with your fears, with your doubts, with your X, Y, and Zs. But as you develop that, then you're able to see, oh, wow, wait a minute. This is who I am. These are my values. This is what I stand for. This is what I love. This is what I don't like. Then you're able to restructure your GPS and go towards the direction you want. Now, granted, the journey is not always going to be straight, like a GPS, right? You could go somewhere and then there's a roadblock. The GPS is going to say, hey, just take a turn here, go there. It's going to take a bit longer, but we're going to get back on track. Now, the only way you set that GPS is through clarity. Now, the second thing when it comes to fear, as you develop this, like you said, like a muscle, when you're in the gym and you rip your muscle tissues and it repairs because you're pushing it so much more, it's the same thing with fear. The more you face fear, the more you overcome small challenges and then bigger and bigger, then you start creating a framework of like, oh, look at all these successes that I've had with this fear. So then you start creating that muscle. It's the same thing. So you have to look at a certain point in your life, there was something that you started that you weren't really good at and you were afraid of. And now you're an amazing person at it. And then you understand, oh, that fear in the beginning was the fear of like unknown. So then once you realize that fear, what it does is just a indicator that you're getting out of your comfort zone, then you don't start running away from fear, but you start seeking it. You start calling it. Because if you're not afraid, then you're just not getting out of your comfort zone. You're not pushing enough. You're not challenging yourself enough. Now, let me create a caveat here. Because I'm saying very clearly, you have to chase your fears.
Yeah.
Now, I don't want person to hear this or the listeners to be like, oh, cool. Chris told me to chase his fear. Cool. I'm going to go jump off of a building. I'm super afraid. He said it's a great idea. No, that's just being dumb. Sorry to say. But there's a difference between fear and danger. This is the caveat that's very important. And this is where people can mix up both. They think fear is danger, but it's not. What are you afraid of? To go up and say hi to that person in that room to potentially ask them out on a date? What are you afraid of? To call your prospect and to really get rejected potentially or potentially to serve that person? What are you really afraid of? But they assume that fear is danger. But no, that's not danger. Danger is jumping off of a building. That's just stupid, right? So you have to look at fear and disassociate the danger part of it. And as you're able to do that, then you're able to take actions in place to really overcome those fears. And then it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And then your comfort zone just gets bigger. And that's how you succeed and become a very well-rounded individual in regards to your skills and your attributes.
Let's freaking go, Christopher. Mic drop. We could just cut it there.
Let's go.
Beautifully said, man. I think there's one other thing too, as we look at this fear piece, that is, really important to touch on as well. And it's that part of the reason we're afraid of things sometimes, or that we have fear, is because that thing's important to us, right? If something's not important to us, well, we probably don't have fear around it because we don't really care to do it. But if we have fear attached to something, it's because there's something either consciously or unconsciously going, that's important in my life. I want to pursue it, but I'm scared and I have fear because it's important to us and we're afraid if it doesn't work out the way that we want it to. So it's almost like you're saying, you know, chase the fear. It's like, let the fear really almost guide you to where, to what you yes. want to do with your life. Because that's all fear is it's showing you what are the important things to your life. And again, I love the way you put it, fear versus danger. Those are two very different things. But if you can pursue the fear, if you can allow the fear to guide you, it really is this like sort of unknown, beautiful GPS that most people don't use effectively.
That's exactly what it is, too. And you mentioned something I really want to unpack as, I don't know if you know, but I'm a geek of brain science. It's something I teach to my executive one-on-one coaching clients, because I truly believe for you to succeed and be a high-performing individual, you have to understand the biochemistry of the brain and the body. Because if you don't, your body is working against you without you knowing. So here's an analogy. You have a boat, and let's say it's a sailboat, and you're going against the wind. I mean, you could legit use that wind for your advantage, and you're going to be forcing less and go so much further. Yeah. So that's the analogy that you have to visualize. And why am I saying this? When you're talking about fear, when you're talking about approaching it, you're like, is it subconscious, conscious, because it's something that we're passionate about? Most of the time it's subconscious. And why that is because our human brain has been evolving over the thousands of years. And initially our brain has one job, to keep us alive. Okay. And back in the day, to keep us alive was not get eaten by saber tigers or X, Y, and Z. Nowadays, that danger doesn't exist for us anymore. But we have other types of danger. And his job is still to protect us. But it's protecting us of what? Of social media, of self-doubt, of the fear to go say hi to that person. And that's where it kind of gets locked up. Now, here's an actionable, tangible technique that I'm going to give for people when they get fear. And they're like, they want to do something, but they're hesitating.
Yeah.
You just need 3 seconds of courage. That's it. That's all. Mm. Now, let me explain it in the biochemistry level. Okay. If you start thinking about something, let me just give you an easy example. You're in a bar, you see somebody, you want to go say hi to them. They're the opposite sex. They're the same sex, whatever. You find them attractive. You're like, hey, I want to go speak to this person. And then you start doubting. So, there's other people around. You can find me good looking, whatever the case is. And then you start getting in your head. If you have that instinctive moment of you want to do it, and you just start counting 3, 2, 1, go. And then you get up and you go into that action. You're overcoming the fear. Why that is because that initial idea starts in your prefrontal cortex. Your prefrontal cortex is the part of the brain that's right behind your forehead. It's probably one of the most expensive real estate in your brain. Okay. That's where ideas start. That's where motivation gets. But then if you start getting that and then start doubting it, like I mentioned, the brain has one job, is to protect you. It starts looking at all the scenarios that you can get hurt in that potential you meeting up to that person. So it's like, okay, Chris, you want to go say hi to this person, but potentially she'll say no. Potentially they'll do this. Potentially you look like a fool in front of your friends. And then you start believing this BS. And when I'm saying BS, I'm not swearing here because my mom would not be proud. I'm talking about your belief systems. You start believing these false belief systems. So all you need is 3 seconds. Because what happens is that 3 seconds interrupts. There's a pattern interrupt from your prefrontal cortex to going to your brain and start analyzing negative starts. You just put in action. And what that action does, it creates another bigger action, which is getting up, walking closer, and then having that interaction or whatever in that one particular example. Now, granted, I give you an example over here in a bar, but the same thing could happen to calling a colleague, getting a prospect on a phone, starting that initial, like, okay, I'm going to start a business, quitting, whatever the case is. So that's the tangible way to go about approaching that.
Yeah. 3 seconds of courage. Easy.
Yeah.
Right. And I think the important thing is you just got to do it, because you know what I mean? You go, 3 seconds of courage is easy. Easier said than done. So if you're listening to this, use the 3 seconds of courage today. Make that your goal today, is to go execute on having courage for 3 seconds. And so to tie this all together, sort of the fear loop that we're, you know, circled around for a little bit, I'm curious, and I don't know if I quite heard it. Maybe I did, maybe I didn't. But for you, what was that moment that made you say, I'm not letting this fear control me anymore? Like, what was the moment, if you remember, that was like,
yes,
an entrepreneurship is my calling and I'm going to finally step into it?
Yes. So that moment for me was this initial aspect of I knew that I was unhappy. It's like almost hitting the rock bottom. Now, rock bottom for me in that scenario is, like I said, I was becoming an industrial fireman. It wasn't exactly what I wanted in a subconscious way. My body was rejecting it. And then it put me in questions of like, wait a minute, I should be doing more than what I'm doing right now in life. Like, God did not put me on this planet to do what I'm doing. So it was that questioning period for me that really interacted that. And then I started getting more in tune with my gut, with my inner voice. And that gut and that inner voice has been guiding me throughout the rest of my life. All my best business decisions has been listening to my gut, my partners, my clients, my X, Y, and Z. And every single time I repress that inner voice, I hit a wall, I fail at a business, or X, Y, and Z. So for me, that real switch of like, let me let go of that fear is just trusting and letting go of like, hey, if I'm feeling I should be doing here, let me go ahead and give this a try. And then it's just having that aspect of every single day, asking yourself, okay, we're doing the right thing. Let's keep on pushing. Let's keep on pushing. It's one step at a time. So it's that mix of trusting your inner voice, because everybody already knows what they should do. But once again, they disguise it out of practicality. And this is something actually, somebody that was in the stands when I was giving a speech told me, one of the audience members came to me afterwards. And she's the one that told me, she's like, Chris, it's so crazy. We're talking about your learning disability and your speaking. And she's like, you were so afraid of reading that you rather run into a building that's on fire, literal fire. And I had never noticed it at that point. I was in like maybe 27 at that point when she told me that. And it was such an aha moment. I'm like, wow, fear is so powerful and it dictates our lives. So we have to be very aware. And then we could utilize that for our advantage instead of letting fear utilize us. Like I said, utilizing for our advantage is noticing where the fear is and going towards it. That just means we're in expansion, we're in growth. So that's when it really happened to me and I connected to my inner voice of like, let me just trust inside without knowing what the outcome is going to be. And it's not in our business to find out what the outcome is going to be. We just have to set our goals and be like, all right, let's just figure it out. And as we go, it gets clearer and clearer and clearer.
Yeah. And it's a beautifully freeing experience too, when you do let go, right? Yes. When you're like trying to hold on, you're like, this is the thing. And it's like the fear disguising is practicality. And finally you're like, you know what? I'm just going to let go. I'm just going to listen. I'm just going to be guided. And all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, like life is easier. I'm like finally listening to this thing that's been calling me. And all of a sudden it's like, things just start to fall into place. You're like, how did that person know to call me? Like the person for your first speaking engagement, right? It was like the right dominoes fell into place because you finally let go and allowed the things to come into your life rather than trying to fight them with practicality. That was really just fear.
So accurate, Stu. That is so accurate.
What's up, my friends? It's Stu, and I have big news. After interviewing hundreds of people on their journey in life and experiencing my own journey to a life full of fulfillment and passion, I finally put together a special guide just for you. And it's called 3 Steps to Finding Direction in Under 10 Minutes. And you can go grab it at findingdirectionuniversity.com/3steps. If you're feeling lost and like you're not quite sure what you want to do with your life, this guide will help you figure out exactly what your next step is in just under 10 minutes. You're not alone in this journey, and I'm excited to guide you through this process until you've truly created a life that you love. Go grab the guide at findingdirectionuniversity.com/3steps. I look forward to helping you create your dream life.
There's a saying, and not saying anything religious or whatever, but there's a saying that goes, let go and let God. That's exactly it. Like I said, your God, universe, Mother Earth, whatever it is.
Right.
But that's exactly it. If let you're go. Countering that analogy that we gave, you have this beautiful sailboat, but you're countering against the wind, against the wind, against the wind, and you're working so hard, and you look at everybody around you, they're like sailing and they're going faster. Like, how's it happening? It's because they actually have the wind in their back and they're actually doing what they should do. But if you're trying to do something that you're not supposed to do, because the universe wants you to succeed, it's like it's made for you to succeed. Like the universe did not create anything that's not perfect in a sense, right? It didn't make a mistake with anybody, even within the imperfections. And it's not going to start with you. It's not going to start with me. And it's not going to start with other listeners. But if you counter that, if you fight against it, then you're always going to feel that pressure. So I like that comment.
So one thing I think this is a perfect segue into this is like you're saying, everything was created perfectly, right? In the right place at the right time. And I'm curious, like, what advice would you give to someone, let's say, that's listening to this and they can relate to you in the sense where they're like, you know what, I'm not a huge fan of the word disability, because I think it's all perspective, right? It's like, yeah, your disability can be your superpower if you allow it to. And so I'm just curious, like, what advice would you give to someone that's maybe listening to this and they're going, you know what? Yeah, I've always been told I have this thing or that thing that's, you know, quote unquote, people say it's a disability. Like, what advice would you have them to kind of move through that? And maybe it's letting go and letting that guide them, or just like how they can not have that be something that's holding them down.
Okay. Great question. Once again, I'm going to correlate it to the education system and just to anybody's reality, right? So if you have this, like you said, call it disability or call it difficulty, call it challenge. Yeah. And that challenge is maybe people telling you that you're not good enough because of that, or you're believing that you're not good enough because of that, or whatever the case is. There isn't one single individual on this beautiful blue earth that we live on that wasn't given a gift the moment that they were born. Your job is to find out what that gift is. Now, maybe that disability for you is just like me, which is reading. Maybe it's writing. Maybe you're not a great singer. Maybe you're not good at networking. Maybe you're awkward. Maybe this, that, and the other, like whatever the case is. But everybody has something they're good at. So maybe socially you're awkward, but maybe you're a genius when it comes to programming. Yeah. Maybe you're great about, you know, writing novels, and you're like introvert or ambivert or extrovert, whatever the case is. What I'm telling you right now is find out what is your gift. And your gift, to highlight it, is the thing that you do the best with the least amount of effort. Once you're able to pick that out, be like, yo, this is my gift. This is my, the universe gave me this talent. Then you're like, I'm passionate about this. I want to do this. Then you lean heavily into that. So you have to do a self-assessment. When I said in the beginning, the most important thing to be a high-achieving individual, high-performing individual, is massive clarity. So you have to know, what are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? Now, I'm not saying discard your weaknesses. Keep on working on it to make them a bit better. But I'm not going to say to live on it. Oh my God, my weakness is this. So you just work on it like crazy. Because if it is your weakness, you're not natural at it, you're just not going to get phenomenal at it. But the ones that you're already great at, then that's the one you have to start putting more time on and more work on. And then as you do that, then other people that have strengths within your weaknesses are going to come work with you. And then as a unit, you guys are going to get so much better. As a team, as an organization, you're going to get so much better. So what I'm going to tell these people that have disabilities, that have difficulties, what are you great at? Develop that. And for me, it was that moment when I said, when I went on stage, it was this divine moment. Yeah. I realized my whole life was preparing me to speak. And I'm like, yo, I'm meant to be a speaker. And the reason why that is like I said, because I had no choice. I wasn't good at reading and writing. So I had to be charming at school to get passing grades. I had to be active in class. So the teacher's like, oh, this kid is actually smart. Because if I read his grades, or I look at him in the exam, he sucks butt. But it doesn't really suck. I am intelligent. I have different types of intelligence.
Yeah.
So then as I figured that out, then if you really want to be an expert at it, then you're like, you have to go hard, because it's not just the talent. Then it's the massive work. Then it's how you're going to be a master at this. How are you going to study the crap and so on and so forth. So that's what I would say for anybody that's going through a difficult time with anything. Look at what you're good at and develop that. And to be quite honest, anybody you are massively a fan of, you are massively in love with, their talent are exactly that. They have one or two things that they're masters at, and that's it. If you look at Beyonce, she's a phenomenal artist. She's great, and she's great at that. But maybe if you sit down with Beyonce and have an in-depth conversation, maybe she's not a conversationalist. Maybe she doesn't know stocks. Maybe makes Y and Z, and that's normal. So anyways, I'm going to get off my soapbox for now, but essentially that's what it is. Find what you're good at, develop that, and the things that you're not as good at, work on making them better, but lean heavily on your strengths, and your weaknesses will get filled with people around you, with your team around you, and with wherever you're going with your goals.
Damn, mic drop after mic drop, Christopher. I love it, man.
Let's go.
One thing I want to hear a little bit more from you is, doing some research on you and your world before this, I heard somewhere that, and you could correct me if I'm stating this wrong, but did you read about a book every week and a half or so? Maybe, you know, if we stretch it 2 weeks, you know, you read a few books a month. Hearing your story and your background, at least where my brain goes, and maybe where some other people's brain goes, is wait, that, like, you're dyslexic, so it's hard to put words together, but you're reading a book every week and a half. So how did you get so damn good at reading? If it was like, even, you know what I mean? There's people that are not dyslexic that are not good at reading. You had that, and you know what I mean? You're a phenomenal reader.
Okay. Great question, Stu. Thank you for that. So yes, I do read a book a week. So 52 books a year. Now it's so amazing that you highlighted this, because this is exactly like, listen, I'm not just talking to talk. I walk the walk. And I'm going to explain it. How, when I got into that school, what did I do? I learned how to learn. I'm not a reader. I'm like, what I mean, I'm not a reader, is that if you give me a book and you just ask me to read, it's going to take me so much more time. But I figured out, how do I consume information? How do I retain information? What's the best way to go about it? And then once I figure out me, which is, once again, taking back to us, massive clarity. I understand who I am. I understand how I consume information. Then I'm able to open up the funnels and drink out of a fire hydrant of information, because I'm somebody that's massively curious. Now, the question is, how am I reading that much being dyslexic? Okay, I'm going to explain it in a very tangible way. I even have a YouTube video on this on my YouTube channel at Christopher Dedan, explaining how I read so much and I'm able to go about it. So because I'm dyslexic, I listen and retain information very well. Because once again, education system, when the teacher used to come into the classroom and give us the example of what we need to do within the homework, I couldn't rely on me being able to read the text and being able to do it. So I had to remember what she told us so I could do the work properly. So because I have a good memory, I'm really good at listening. So for me, I read audiobooks, but how do I go about it? I have the audiobook in my ear and I have the physical book in my hands. Now, we could actually listen 2 to 3 times faster our speeding reading. So even if you read super fast, it's impossible for you to read as fast as you listen. So I listen to my books, I would say 2.5 to 3 times faster than the normal rate. So just that in itself, it makes me consume information so much more. Now, I do it with the book because I still highlight, I'm still very much active and so on and so forth. Now, as I'm doing this, I'm retaining information so much more and I'm able to go through the book so much more. Now, how do I go about reading a book a week? Initially, when I decided to do this in 2018, I started reading book cover to cover, and I noticed that's not the way to go about it. I read only 18 books that year. Okay. And I'm saying only 18, 18 is still a good number, but my goal was 52. I significantly failed at that amount. And then I realized, I'm like, why was that? It's because certain books were more cognitively challenging. They were just like more like in depth. Like I read some books that are legit, like they're teaching us about brain science, about human psychology and so on and so forth. And they just get heavy. Some books I read, they're super light and I go through it. And then I realized, okay, for me to read every single day, because I calculated, I have to read 30 minutes per day, every single day, for me to have massive knowledge and to be able to do 52 books a year. So I'm like, instead of just being a goal of reading every single day and reading a particular book, I have to read with the mood that I have. Because there's days I want to read that kind of books, but there's days I don't want. I want to be like, hey, let me lay back and read a Harry Potter. So I always read anywhere between 3 to 5 books at a time. Now, why that is because I pick the book that I'm reading with the mood that I have. So here's the three categories of books that I'm going to suggest you guys to read within your world. The first category of book is something that you want to learn more of. Like you're like not an expert at, but you're intrigued about it. So imagine you want to learn more about human psychology. You want to learn more about brain science, so on and so forth. Something more cognitive. And that book, I particularly read it in the morning, because in the morning we're so much more fresh, we're so much more open, and we could consume that information a lot better. The second book that I read is the book which is my career, my expertise. So this is a book that I'm probably already know 80 to 90% of the content in this book. But you still have to read it, because if you want to be a master at your craft, you have to continually develop yourself, continue to hear the same things and go get that 10 extra percent or that 5 extra percent that you didn't have. So for me to read that is less demanding, because I know what they're going to say. I'm beyond an expert in personal development at this point, a high performance, because I've read it, I've lived it, I coach it, I've done hours and hours. All I'm doing right now is getting close to my 10,000 hours, which is a concept that was well explained in the book Outlier by Malcolm Gladwell. And the third book is something that's more pleasurable, that demands less cognitive pressure. Like I said, example, the Harry Potters. Example, I read a lot of biographies. That's something I could put in my ear and just like do something else at the same time. I don't need the physical book in front of me. I could listen to it in my car. So by hitting those three points, I'm able to read a book a week. Now, if I want to retain information, now this is, I'm pushing one step further because as I mentioned, I'm a speaker and I'm a coach. I have my academy, which I do group coaching and so on. So I have to have access to these informations. Now, is it physically, Stu, is it physically possible for me to remember every single book I read, like all the content in the books?
Yeah, probably not every single thing.
It's not probably, it's physically impossible unless you have like a memory, like somebody that retains it, like a photogenic memory. It's physically impossible. And even at that, right? So the way I go about it is I look at it as my library is an extension of my brain. So what I have to do is have a nice structure and system for me to go get that information when I want it. So what I do is every single time I'm reading and I find something interesting, I highlight it, I put bookmarks and so on and so forth. And then at the end, every single thing that I wrote at the margins of the book, I put it in a Word document and I put it in a file with the page next to it. And I put it in a binder with all the books that I've read with the comment and the pages. So if I know like, oh, you know what? I read this book, Robert Greene, the human behavior and so on. And I was actually doing, I'm preparing a presentation that I'm going to give to Ray Max next week, a speech. And I'm like, oh, he mentioned this guy that was talking about this. I remember it, but I don't remember exactly where it was. I go open the binder. I'm like, oh, this is what it is. I go pick up that page. I read that page and I'm like, great. Now I could utilize this information within this speech that I'm going to give to Ray Max. I can utilize X, Y, and Z. So my library is probably the most valuable physical, tangible good that I have in my world, more than money, more than my house, and so on and so forth, because I've worked on it, I've written it, and I'm very like specific about it. So I gave a long story, my brother. Yeah. I'm going on rants. I'm very sorry about that. But no, that's the way I approach about reading and how I suggest the listeners and you to do it as well if you want to read a book a week or even more.
Yeah. Well, thank you for the breakdown. And that's an extraordinarily in-depth breakdown, I think, gives, and I love the way that you say you listen to it, but you also read it. So it's like you can highlight things, you can circle them, you can create that book for later, you can go back to because you have the physical copy. I've never heard anybody explain it that way, but I really like that. So a few last questions I have for you. One thing that I've, again, heard you say is if you win the morning and you win the evening, you win the day. And I am someone that is a huge believer in morning routines. I got my morning routine. I know what I do. It creates the structure for my day. I'm curious, what is your evening routine?
Great twist around there. Okay. So here's the thing. I actually wake up at 4 a.m. every single morning. After I say that, everybody's like, okay, what time to go to bed? So let's talk about the evening routine, which is highly valuable. Yeah. I go to bed. Depending if we're summer or we're winter, and I'm going to explain to you why with your melatonin and serotonin levels. If it's in winter, I go to bed around 7:30-ish. In the summer, like at the peak of summer, when it's like 9 p.m. and still sunny, I don't go to bed at that time. I go to bed right when the sun drops. And I always wake up at 4 a.m. So naturally in the summer, your body is going to sleep less. Towards in the winter, you're going to sleep a lot more. Now, why that is? When the sun goes down, 2 hours after it goes down, naturally your level of melatonin in your body goes up. Melatonin is the chemical secretion that makes you fall asleep. Right. So then that melatonin level makes you fall asleep, makes you get tired. So the second that that hits, I go to bed because the melatonin level is really high anywhere between 8 to midnight. So that's the period that is very high. So you want to sleep during that time because it's the moment that's the most recuperative. So if you worked out, your body's going to recuperate faster. If you studied so much, you did work and all that stuff, your brain is going to associate what you learn in the proper parts of your brain so it can stay there in a long term, which is actually going from your prefrontal cortex, like mentioned previously, to your basal ganglia, which is the middle part of your brain. So that's that approach. And like I said, I always aim to sleep 8 hours, and in the summer it goes down to 7 hours. Essentially, there's like that 1 hour gap of like the difference between the summertime and the wintertime. Yeah. Now, what's my night routine? Okay, so if we take an example of now, the sun goes down approximately around 6:30 p.m. 7-ish, and east side of I'm in from Montreal, Canada, east side. So I finish working around 5-6-ish. I After that, after I do my analysis of how the day went, I look at what went well, what were certain things I want to improve on, and what do I need to do the next day, I go into reading my book. So I talked about it, right? So this is a part of my book, but it's not the cognitive book. Usually at this point, it's a book that right. is just more like the in-between-ish, more relaxed and all that stuff. I have my reading nook over here in my office, sit down and have that. It's time to relax. Now, why do I do that? Because the last hour of the day before we're going to bed, I have no electronics. So all I'm doing is non-electronics, because why that is because the blue light increases what? Your serotonin. So like we said, the melatonin makes you fall asleep. When sun hits, it's your serotonin level that goes up and you wake up. So I don't want my melatonin levels to be hit, right? And Stu, you've probably had this, right? Have you ever watched a show, like you binged a Netflix show and you're super tired, but it's so good. It's like, oh my God, let me watch another one. But you feel like a zombie, but you continue on watching, even though you're physically tired, but you're not sleeping. Has that already happened to you?
Yeah, I've been there for sure.
Okay. Everybody's been there. I've been there several times. Now what's happening is you're fighting your melatonin levels with the serotonin levels of the blue light. So you do not want to counteractivate your natural body. When we're talking about your brain chemistry and your body chemistry, this is what you need to know as a higher performer. So I try to utilize that as much as possible. That's why I sleep super early, because my body reacts and recuperates the best in the early parts of the night. And then the last part of the night, when I wake up at 4 a.m., my brain is the most active. So I'm able to be more creative, more productive, more efficient. So that's the thing I do after my reading. I go and I meditate. I meditate in the morning and at night. So anywhere between like 10 to 15 minutes, I do a Vipassana meditation. So scan my body, check what's up. After my meditation, I do a couple of stretches to really see how my body's feeling, because I actually work out very hard. I do CrossFit. I try to compete in it and all that stuff. So I put my body into a lot of stress. So I notice, I'm like, oh, how's my quads? How's this? How's that? Let me just check what's happening. And then I go to bed. How do I go to bed? Let me unpack this a bit more. Yeah. I get butt booty naked. Why is that? Even here in Montreal, when it gets like really, really cold, I get naked because I'm trying to drop my body temperature as low as possible. If I drop my body temperature to as low as possible, I'm able to get into more recuperative sleep. So once you are in a lower level of temperature, then you're going to have a better sleep in that regard. So I'm naked. And another thing, I don't put my phone on my nightstand. And if somebody says, oh, but my phone is my alarm clock, go on Google, go type Amazon and buy an alarm clock, but not just any alarm clock, buy a sunrising alarm clock. So that's what I have, a sunrising alarm clock. 30 minutes before I set the time for it to wake up, naturally it like opens up the light gradually 30 minutes. Now, why am I doing that? Because I wake up at 4 a.m. I always wake up before the sun. And if you just mentioned it, there's levels of serotonin and melatonin, right?
Right.
Once the sun comes out, your serotonin goes up. So by this light naturally coming up, it's activating that aspect of the light. And my level of serotonin is like, okay, well, Chris needs to wake up. It activates it more gradually instead of like an alarm and making you shocked. And you're like, oh my God. So that's my nighttime routine. And as well, I squeeze in sometimes right before going to bed or before my meditation, a little session of guitar. I'm not a guitar player, but I like to, you know, just unwind and disconnect. I might even play chess, whatever is really just to get myself in that state of like being in that moment and not thinking about anything else. So that's the process of how I do my nighttime routine.
I love it. So the last hour then, to just recap this, is the last hour of your day, then that's when you do some reading, then you do some meditation, some stretching, all without electronics, and then you go to bed.
Exactly. And I play the guitar maybe before the meditation for a few minutes, but not every day the guitar is when I feel like it, because that one I just go with like just kind of expressing my creativity in a sense. So yeah, that's all in that last hour of the day.
Heck yeah. I love it, man. I'm gonna start calling you the human encyclopedia.
I appreciate you.
All the wisdom, man.
I appreciate you.
Yeah. So, Christopher, I mean, you know, if people are listening to this, they're going, holy crap, I need more of Christopher in my life. Where's the best place for them to find you, see what you're up to, get in contact with you, just, you know, be around your world?
So, man, thank you for that. So first and foremost, I want to offer something special to your listeners and your viewers. But before doing so, if you want to reach out to me, essentially at Christopher Deyan on all social media. So my family name is D-E-D-E-Y-A-N. The three socials that I'm like the most active on is YouTube. So you go check out. I have a bunch of content over there. I have book reviews there. I have how to be a better entrepreneur, so on and so forth, because I work with top end CEO. So I have that, all that aspect. My Instagram is something that me and my team spend a lot of time in as well. And my LinkedIn, those are my top three, but I'm everywhere else, like from TikTok to whatever, Facebook and all that fun stuff. Now here's one thing that, Stu, I want to offer you and your listeners. So as you saw, and I'm like so humbled and blessed that you're seeing I'm a human encyclopedia. Like I said, I'm just very structured and I've been doing this for a minute, but I'm offering a complimentary discovery call to anybody that has listened to this podcast and wants to reach out to me. And we're going to do a 30-minute free coaching call. You're going to come in with any problem, solution that you want to work on. In that 30 minutes, I guarantee you, we're going to work on it together. We're going to hit it out of the ballpark and you're going to have either solve that problem or put you on the right direction to start solving that problem. Yeah. Now I'm offering this complimentary to Stu and your listeners to find your direction, podcast and so on and so forth. Now, let me be clear here. Okay. Let me just put a caveat. Yeah. I am not looking for tire kickers. The people that I work with are high achieving individuals that are going to come show up and willing to put in the work. If that's not you, don't connect with me, to be quite honest. Like it's very direct. I'm sorry to be this direct, but that's the reality. I want people that are maybe at a certain level that have succeeded and they know that there's another level, but they're like missing a couple of like cues here and there to go to that next level. Because my journey and my purpose for me is I want to serve humanity, but I want to serve people that are hungry and they're in a service base as well. And they want to go to that next level. So if that is you, connect with me and my team. You could reach out to us on my website at deyanenterprises.com. You could fill out the form over there and we'll be able to connect with you, or just on the socials as well. If you connect with me or my team, we'll send you a Calendly link. We'll check it out if that works out and we'll kind of take it from there. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, man. And extraordinarily generous on your time as well. I know obviously time is valuable. So for real, take Christopher up on that. If you're looking to get to that next level, we'll put it in the show notes as well, so people have easy access. And the last question I have for you, question we ask all our guests, because as we spoke about even before we recorded, we believe in, you know, finding your direction, but doing it through action. And I would be curious for you, what would you say is one thing someone listening to this can do in the next 24 to 48 hours to start finding direction in their life?
Great question. It would be one thing. There's several things, but the main thing I want to highlight here is gratitude. Start a gratitude journal. If you do not have a gratitude journal, you are just missing out, beyond missing out. Because listen, our North American approach of like wanting more, going for more, more this, more that is perfectly okay. Like I have ambitious goals. I'm blessed to be in a beautiful condo, have a beautiful car, the clothes, all that fun stuff. But if you're just looking at what you want, working towards what you want and not taking a step back and looking at what you are blessed to have right now, as simple as, and not as simple as, but the main thing is that, hey, you know what? I'm alive today. Hey, you know what? I have a beautiful family today. Hey, you know what? I have energy today. Hey, you know what? I'm struggling today. The universe is preparing me to do something better. It's that gratitude that's going to make you work towards it and have more to be grateful for. So you cannot like push that aside. It's a very easy thing. Every single morning I wake up and I write three things that I'm grateful for. So that's what I would suggest at a high level. Obviously there's so many more things I can unpack, but the easiest, most tangible way, start working with a gratitude journal.
Love it. Awesome. Well, Christopher, it's been a joy to have you here, man. Again, Christopher, AKA the Human Encyclopedia. Thanks for hanging out with us today.
Thank you, my brother, Stu. Awesome job with everything. Awesome job with the success of your podcast, man. Keep on doing you, brother.
Thank you. Wow. What did I tell you? The Human Encyclopedia was no joke. Christopher, thank you for bringing us all the wisdom. Everybody go check out Christopher, see what he's up to. Continue to stay plugged into his world. You, I promise, will continue to get a load of value. Now, if you haven't yet, again, I'm going to give you one more friendly poke and ask you to go leave us a review on iTunes real quick. Leave us a rating on Spotify if that's where you're listening to us. Give us whatever star rating you feel is appropriate for the value you got from this episode. And if you got anything in particular, you can always send me a message on social media. Just let me know, what are you enjoying? What do you want more of? I'm happy to have a conversation with you, and I would love to see how we can continue to add value to your life and to your world. So Congrats on crushing it through another episode here, and I will see you or talk to you on the podcast shortly. Take care, everybody.